Hi, I'm Alan Brown and I'm Seeking the Kingdom. In this session we're asking, what is faith? In Matthew 8 there's a story about a guy who amazed Jesus with his faith. Jesus described him as having great faith. Who was this guy? What was his faith? How did his faith come to amaze Jesus? That's where we're headed in this session. Faith's an interesting word in our culture. There are people who want to believe. Almost like the X-Files, where Mulder says, I want to believe that there's something beyond, that there's more out there, that somewhere out there must be something more than just us on our little planet. And I know people who can relate to that, who want to believe but struggle to find the evidence for that. There are others who aren't so much interested in evidence as just kind of hoping for the right outcome. Faith preaching became very popular in the 20th century. There were people who almost treated God like a kind of a slot machine with faith as the currency. So if you put the currency into the machine, you could get out of God whatever you wanted. Didn't strike them as odd that this was very self-serving, like a slot machine is self-service. But God doesn't exist to be self-service for us. Perhaps it's the other way around, that if we had faith in God, we would come into his service and be engaged in the things that he's doing in his world. What is faith? How does it work? What can we learn from this particular character? The story starts in Matthew chapter 8, verse 5, as Jesus returns to Capernaum after a really successful preaching tour through Galilee that included the Sermon on the Mount. He's just kind of buzzing with all the excitement, the response that people have had to the messages that he's been giving. But he's met by the police at the gate. Well, in his culture, this guy's called a centurion. It's the equivalent of being pulled over by the police as he comes back into Capernaum. Just not what you want to happen. This guy says to Jesus, could you help? My servant lies at home. He can't move. He's suffering terribly. Now, Jesus notices, I think, the word that this guy uses to describe terrible suffering. It's actually the word you would use for torture. So when a leader of the guard, the authorities, know all about torture and they use this word to describe the torture that the servant is suffering at home with his illness, something about this guy that doesn't just fit the stereotypes of what you might have expected from a centurion. A centurion's a guy who has nominally 100 people under him. The stereotype would have been that he was an authoritative character, barking orders at everybody, running around with a sword, probably with blood on the tip that he hadn't managed to wipe off. Probably that was the stereotype, someone who hated Jewish people. But this guy doesn't come across like that. In fact, in Luke chapter 7, Luke gives us a little bit more background on the guy as someone who is not anti-Jewish at all. He loves our nation and he has built our synagogue, is how the leaders of Capernaum describe this guy. Now, I've stood in the synagogue in Capernaum. All that remains from the first century is probably the floor level, but the stones there let you know this was a significant synagogue in first century times. One of the most significant synagogues on the shores of Galilee. So this would have been an incredibly huge and expensive and time-consuming task to build this synagogue, and this guy's been contributing towards that task. He's not anti-Jewish at all. He doesn't fit the stereotypes. And so he's coming to the Jewish prophet who's making his way back into Capernaum and saying to him, can you help? And Jesus says to him, you want me to come to your house and heal this guy? The centurion says to him, Lord, I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. Just say the word and my servant will be healed. Now that's staggering, that a foreigner, someone who's come into the land as a foreigner and is holding Roman power, oppressive power over the land, has such a positive attitude towards the people and recognizes a Jewish prophet as someone who might care for him. Jesus has healed people here in Capernaum before. There are stories of who he's healed elsewhere. This guy's heard the stories. He comes and approaches Jesus as someone who is an authority figure. The centurion has power, but he says, I have no power compared with you. I don't deserve to have you come under my roof. In an honor shame culture, that's a pretty significant statement. Who does he think Jesus is? Where does he think Jesus' authority comes from? He goes on in verse 9 and says, "For I myself am a man under authority with soldiers under me. I say to this one, go, and he goes, and to that one, come, and he comes. And I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." Interesting, he describes himself as under authority. Lots of people want to tell you how many people they are over, not how many people they're under. Because he's under authority, and yes, he has soldiers who are under him as well, he realizes that the whole of the Roman Empire stands behind him. He is to enforce what Rome decrees, and if people don't do what he says, he's a man under authority, so Rome will stand behind that and insist that the order is complied with. What has that got to do with Jesus? He perceives Jesus as being a man under authority who has a world under him. The authority that Jesus is under is the kingdom of heaven, not the kingdom of Rome. He perceives that whatever Jesus decrees, whatever Jesus says is to happen on earth, will happen on earth, because the whole of heaven is standing behind his statement, his decree. That is a staggering faith. Jesus was amazed and said to those who were following him, "I tell you truly, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith." So faith has nothing to do with manipulating God to get whatever I want out of God. Faith has nothing to do with hoping that there might be something out there in the heavens far beyond us, when in fact the heavens have sent someone here to earth. And we can know about God by looking at the person who was standing in front of the centurion in the first century in Galilee. God isn't far away, distant in the sky somewhere. God is someone who comes to us, who gets involved with the earth, because he cares what happens on earth, and whatever he says is to happen on earth happens because the authority of heaven stands behind him. This is staggering from a guy who really has started behind the eight ball. This foreigner sent to Palestine and maybe not even wanting to go, having to leave many of his family in Rome or wherever else he may have come from, and sent to Palestine, has no background in the Jewish culture, the Jewish faith, the Jewish history. He's had to learn these things since he arrived. He didn't grow up under the Torah of the Old Testament. He didn't grow up with the promises of the prophets that one day God himself would return to Israel, the king would return to reestablish the reign of heaven on earth. He didn't grow up with these stories. He grew up as a foreigner. What about the people who grew up with that story? What about the people who grew up as the descendants of Jacob with the Old Testament stories, with the promises that God would come and restore his reign over the earth through Israel? A foreigner recognizes it when many of the people around Jesus don't even recognize who he is, the authority that he carries, that he is in fact the Christ, the anointed ruler sent from heaven to set things right here on earth. That's the essence of our faith. Faith is not believing a set of doctrines. Now, doctrines are good. The word creed means literally, I believe. I believe in God the Father. I believe in Jesus the Son. I believe in the Holy Spirit. There's one God experienced in three persons. That's great. But ticking the boxes is not the essence of our faith. The creed is simply meant to be a statement that leads us to a person. Because the creed is centered around who Jesus is. Because Jesus is the revelation of God, the revelation of heaven's authority on the earth, restored through Jesus. This guy is starting to get who Jesus is. Faith isn't just ticking boxes. Faith is trust in a person. In this case, we're talking about trust in the person whom God has appointed to set things right on earth. So when I say I believe, what I mean is that I believe that Jesus is the God-appointed ruler, the Christ, who will set things right on earth because he is the Son who represents his Father's rule. Father reigns in heaven. He has given authority to the Son. Jesus will set right everything that is wrong on earth. And a guy who comes from the authority of Rome can see that, whereas many who've grown up in the story of Israel cannot. That's why Jesus goes on in verse 11 to say, I say to you that many will come from the east and the west, that is from other nations, from other places. Did this guy come from Rome in the west? Did he come from Babylon in the east? I don't know where this particular centurion came from, but he's not the only one. Jesus sees there will be many others who will come from the surrounding nations who are not part of the Old Testament story. And they will take their places at the feast with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were the patriarchs. Jacob was, in fact, Israel. The 12 tribes came from him, and he became the nation of Israel. He became literally Israel, if you like. But the promises weren't just given to Jacob. They came down to him through Isaac and through Abraham. And the promises to Abraham were that not only would God take his descendants, Jacob's descendants, and build them into a land and a kingdom and a people, he would also bless the other peoples of the earth through him. The peoples from all the families, all the clans, all the nations of the earth would be blessed through the Abrahamic family. So the promises given to Israel were always for the benefit of people from other nations, people like the centurion. And in this particular moment, Jesus is seeing a foreigner who recognizes the Jewish Messiah as the one who can set right the things that are wrong on earth, such as the torturous suffering that his own servant is experiencing, something he himself cannot fix. But he comes to Jesus because he has the faith that Jesus can set right on earth all the things that are wrong. That's the faith that we are called to. Faith is trust in Jesus as the man of authority, the authority to whom God's kingship comes to earth. Faith is a kingdom statement that Jesus is the king and the kingdom of heaven is coming to earth through Jesus. In verse 12, Jesus laments that many of the subjects of the kingdom, the people who have had the Old Testament story, the law and the prophets, the experience of what it was like to be under the Davidic kingship, who represented God's king on earth, those who've grown disillusioned with hundreds of years of foreign occupation and not seeing the reign of God, those subjects who've gradually become cold to the whole idea that God's kingship could be restored. And so they don't recognize Jesus. They're cynical that Jesus is the one who can set everything right on earth. Those people who don't recognize his kingship will be thrown outside into the darkness where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth, Jesus says in verse 12. The Old Testament prophets had spoken in glowing terms about how wonderful it would be when God's kingship returned to Israel. They described it as like a darkness that had come across the face of the people. Isaiah 60, for example, calls Jerusalem to wake up, to come to light, to recognize the dawning of the restoration of God's reign. The people who'd been in darkness are now coming into the light of the brightness of God. And according to Isaiah 60 and verse 3, even nations, people from other nations, will come to the brightness of your light. But what Jesus sees is people from other nations coming to the brightness of the light of God and the restoration of God's reign through him, while some of those who are inside Israel have failed to see their Messiah. And you know, that's still the grief that we experience today. There are many of the Jewish people whose history goes right back to Abraham, Isaac, and ultimately to Jacob, but who are living in darkness, who have no questions answered about why they have suffered so long in so many ways, and under the Holocaust with Hitler most recently, and down through centuries mistreated by Christians, mistreated by Muslims, mistreated by people of other nations. how do they remain in that kind of darkness? And the weeping, the regret, the horror of that is part of what Jewish people struggle with today. And Jesus grieved at the recognition that there'd be foreigners who would recognize him as the Messiah, while some of his own people, his own nation, would not. That's the struggle, my friends. We've had 2,000 years since Jesus declared these words, and the world is still coming under his kingship. It's not complete yet. See, he's in no hurry. He's already conquered death. He's not about to die. He's not a ruler who has to worry about getting the whole job done in his 40-year lifetime. He is the eternal king who has all the time in the world for people to come under his kingship. He doesn't force them to. He doesn't force Jewish people under his kingship. He doesn't force anyone under his kingship. He's the king who waits for people to come under his kingship. But while he does, I think there might be some regret you can hear in his voice that those who could have been subjects of the kingdom don't come to the light of the brightness of God that's seen in Jesus. They remain in darkness where they'll have significant regret. So faith calls us to recognize who Jesus is. Faith is all about who you place your faith in. Do you trust Jesus as the one who can and will set the world right? Do you trust him as the one who has come to let us know that there is someone out there, the one who's come to earth to restore the reign of God, to set right everything that is wrong in a world where there's been so much wrong? Is your faith placed firmly in the Messiah, the one whom God has anointed to restore the kingship of heaven on earth? Faith is a kingdom concept. Faith is a calling that you trust the king, the one person who can set life right on earth. Do you believe he will? I'm not asking you to believe he will give you everything you want. He won't always do that. He's king and he decides. I'm not asking you whether you think that everything will be set in your lifetime. He's far too patient for that. We've had 2,000 years already. I don't expect this to be completed in my lifetime because he doesn't force himself on us. But I believe he is king, and I believe he will achieve it. Our faith is in his kingship. Under his kingship, Black lives matter. Indigenous lives matter. Police lives matter. Under his kingship, economically disadvantaged lives matter, and he said he would give them the kingdom. Under his kingship, grieving lives matter. You will receive his comfort. Under his kingship, powerless lives matter. You will inherit the land. Under his kingship, those who have been hungering and thirsting for justice matter. You will find satisfaction in Jesus. Do you believe that Jesus is the king who can set the world right? All it takes is the faith of humanity, the faith of people who trust in his leadership, that he is the one under the authority of heaven who can restore everything that heaven intends for the earth. All it takes is for him to speak the word. So this story ends with Jesus saying to the centurion, "Go, let it be done to you as you believed." Do you believe that Jesus is the anointed ruler? Do you believe that he will set all things right here on earth, that he will restore God's reign, that he will restore everything that's been out of kilter? Then let it be done as you have believed. That's the decree of our King.